You are listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast out of Wesley Seminary at Iwu. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Care.
Servant leadership. Perhaps you're hearing the term for the very first time or experiencing it for the first time as you've read it with this podcast. Perhaps it's a model of leadership that you've tried to emulate through your leadership style and as you've engaged in the roles and practices of leadership. Maybe it's a personality that you've tried to embody even as the Christian faith has interacted with your role and the ways that you are expected to live out your role. Whatever your background is, whatever your knowledge or lack thereof of this term, servant leadership, I think today's guest is a great person to engage us with this conversation and inform us and also coach us along. Joining us today is from Dr. Kathleen Patterson. Kathleen, as she has been asked to be called on our podcast, is the director of the Doctor of Strategic Leadership Program at Regent University, where she's been since 1999. She is a noted expert in servant leadership. She's participated in publications on servant leadership. She's been parts of panels. She has been involved in consulting work as well. So she's run the gamut of academic and then professional consulting around servant leadership. And by way of personal interest, Dr. Patterson, Kathleen, was one of my professors in my doctoral program as well, where I got to know her a little bit and then have enjoyed following her professional work since then as well. So welcome, Kathleen, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Aaron. It's a privilege to be with you today.
Now, let's kind of start at the beginning, because sometimes whenever we use words, we might use them in different ways, even though we use the same word. And leadership, I think, is one of those words. So let's not take it for granted, but just invite you to say and share with us, to you, what is leadership?
And that is the age-old question, Aaron. What is leadership? We look through history, and there's historical documents, there's the written word, there's the Bible, obviously. We've been trying to understand leadership through mythical leaders, legends, tales, all kinds of things to understand historically and even today what is leadership. In 2003, Dr. Bruce Winston and I began to search through a lot of the academic world, the scholarship, and we were going to define, obviously, for everybody, what is leadership by looking at all these definitions. And we isolated over 26,000 articles in 2003.
Wow.
In 2011, we did it again, and there were 1.4 million articles in the databases trying to define leadership. So there's kind of this reason we can't define leadership. It is a mystery in many ways, but it is a beautiful mystery. And our research led us to find 1,000 constructs or statements that we were able to categorize into 91 discrete dimensions. But that's still too big of an animal to tackle in so many ways. And leadership can look different in different arenas. Obviously, if you work in a military context, it might look a certain way. If you work in a ministry context, it might look a certain way. What is working for you? And more importantly, what is working for your followers?
So let's narrow this in then on servant leadership. You are an expert in this field, and obviously you've done the review from a number of different angles and done the academic work of getting a definition. Would you please tell us what is servant leadership?
If I had to define, Aaron, servant leadership into one word, I would say it's love. And we can have so many dimensions into our leadership, but do you love your followers? And if you love your followers, you are going to do the right things for them. You are going to serve them well. They are going to be your primary focus. And when we delve into the servant leadership literature, it is all about focus. What are you focused on as the leader? For those who come from an academic background, there's something called transactional leadership. And that's just the exchange between you and your follower. You expect certain things from your employee, from your follower, and in exchange, you give them a paycheck. It's the lowest level of interaction, lowest level of leadership that there is. Well, let's raise the bar just a little bit. Let's go into transformational leadership, which is a wonderful leadership style. But that's organizationally focused. You as the leader are looking out for the interest of the organization. which is great. We all should be looking out for the interest of the organization or for the ministry or for the nonprofit that we're leading. But it is about the organizational objectives. Servant leadership just ups the ante even more. And your focus as the leader is going to be on your followers. Are you treating your followers well? Are you taking care of them? Are you building better human beings? Do you love them? I really appreciate how Jesus deduced the entire Old Testament law into two things: love God, love others. Simplistic, right? But it's not always easy. And loving our followers and serving them well, there's going to be days that it's incredibly hard to do that. There's going to be some followers that make life very difficult as a leader to be able to do that. But I can assure you, it is a worthwhile journey to serve in the way that you lead your followers to the utmost.
So you're obviously describing this in a way that's very other-focused and other-centric, as a way that the leader is there as a resource and on behalf of the follower. One of the critiques of servant leadership misapplied is to kind of use it strategically. It's to use it as a style of leadership, not to serve your followers, but to get followers, right? It's a set of actions that can be deployed regardless of the leader's character. Why is character so important if people want to develop as a servant leader?
Character matters. Even in this day and age where maybe the culture will tell you it doesn't matter, it matters. And if you are a servant leader and you are invested for the best for your followers, you really need to give them the best of who you are as a leader. And you do want to have a great character. There's been some studies done by Kuzes and Posner that have asked people all over the world, what is the characteristic that you want your leaders to be? And almost always, and literally over the course of decades, the number one thing that followers want in their leader is for their leader to be honest. We just want honest leaders, people who tell us the truth, people who keep their word, people who follow through on the commitments that they make. And character will always matter. If you are not a godly man or a godly woman who has the character of Christ, it will impact not only you as the leader, you're impacting your followers. You're impacting the people that you're leading. And as Christ followers, we really want to get this leadership thing right. We don't want to damage our followers. We don't want to do the wrong things. We don't want anyone to leave underneath our leadership wounded in any way, taking anything ill or ugly with them in any way. We want to build better human beings. When someone leaves you and you have had the privilege of serving them and leading them, are they leaving you better than when you received them? Are they leaving you upbuilt and built up in a way that has made a difference in their lives? Making a difference in someone's life isn't this big, audacious, monumental thing every single day. It's the little things that you're doing as a leader, serving that person faithfully and with honesty and with trust day after day after day.
Let me get into one of the challenges. I work alongside and training pastors, and I was a pastor. And one of the challenges that pastors have is that they often see themselves as servants, and they like being involved in people's lives. They often, if they're adolescents and growing into teenage years and they've been given some responsibility, they've gone into pastoral ministry because they've enjoyed being a servant to people and being active in small things in people's lives and seeing people they can influence, seeing their lives changed and transformed and ameliorated. They've enjoyed that kind of approach to leadership. It's been fairly natural for them even. One of the struggles that can happen is when pastors bring this same approach that they're going to serve their church, and instead of them being able to feel vibrant and alive in this leadership approach, that they end up feeling taken advantage of and maybe even taken for granted. Maybe they feel that that as the servant that their opinion is sometimes denigrated or forgotten. And so it's kind of turned this approach upside down, right? Instead of being truly able to give leadership, that it's kind of fallen the emphasis of servant, and it can become something very difficult. Talk to us a little bit about that phenomenon. Have you seen that played out in ministry contexts, or have you seen that played out in other contexts where, rather than servant leadership being something that is able to help the follower thrive, it becomes something where the leader is pushed down or the leader is taken advantage of?
Sure, Aaron, I've seen that in organizations literally all over the world, but certainly highlighted in a profound way in the ministry context, absolutely. And here's what happens. Robert K. Greenleaf, who is the gentleman in the scholarly world that coined the term servant leadership, if you read his work, he literally talks about how the word servant and leader have become broken. And they need to be rebuilt. And I think sometimes we just don't understand what a servant is. One of the defining hallmarks of a servant leader is their humility, that they are willing to serve, and they just don't think they're all that fantastic, even if everybody tells them they are. They realize they're just a vessel that God is using, that God is filling. And being a servant to other people is truly, really an honor for us to be able to do that. And yes, the world maybe tells us about titles and looking for, executive this or whatever in our roles, but that's truly not what leadership is. Are we willing to be the servant? And I have been just perplexed as I've been reading through the scriptures the last couple of years, looking at Nehemiah. I think sometimes we want to be the wall builder, but we're not always willing to be the cupbearer. With King David, we desire that kingship role, but we're not always willing to be the shepherd. Or even Gideon, the mighty warrior, but also he was the least in his father's house. And I keep asking, are we willing to just be the shepherd, to just be the cupbearer, to just be the one hiding, pressing wheat? Are we willing to just be the greeter at the door? Are we willing to just be the dishwasher at the church or at the company picnic or whatever it is? Are we willing to take these servant roles? Sometimes we're willing to be the wall builder, the king and the warrior, the executive, but we're not always willing to be the servant. And I think God does look at the heart, as scripture tells us, and there needs to be that willingness to be just the shepherd, just the cupbearer, just the one pressing wheat. And you know what? If that's what God has called you to, then have that willingness to embrace that role, that willingness to be whatever he's called us to be. Now, yes, God does put us in starring roles or very noticeable kinds of places that he calls us. But that servant's heart, that tenderness within who we are before him, first of all, needs to be played out day after day after day with the people that we lead and the people that we serve.
So how does that apply to the tenderness towards ourselves? So let me put it another way. I think you're right that there's a certain amount of tenacity and there's a certain amount of self-dignity that comes when a person is focused on living out what God has called them to do and God has called them to be. And so in a sense that if a person is called to be a servant and take a serving role, that it's not another person who's put them in that position, but if it's God who has done that, then there's a certain amount of dignity that comes with that. And perhaps even a certain amount of willingness to say no, if that is starting to cross a line into what is kind of improper expectations or whatever else from who either one is responsible to serve or for whom one is trying to lead in a servant leadership kind of way, that if we're focused on it being the role and the calling that God has given to us, that dignity can give us strength to say no and to set appropriate boundaries that are done, like you're saying, from a tenderness that includes also being tender to ourselves and have reasonable expectations of ourselves as well. I've been reflecting on this C.S. Lewis quote, and I can't find it exactly, but it says something like, "In the Christian life, there are no small roles, or large roles. They're roles played with great humility, whether it's great roles played with great humility and small roles played with great integrity or something like that. It's a great turn of phrase that Lewis, of course, is able to do, and which, of course, I'm not able to get on the moment. but that's kind of what's coming to mind as you're describing that. Let me bring this into maybe another, come at this from another angle. We're seeing the results of the abuse of power. All right, this is prevalent in Hollywood industries, but it's also prevalent. Or I shouldn't say prevalent. We're seeing it revealed in entertainment industry, and we're also seeing it revealed even unfortunately in religious spheres as well. And so some people might be concerned that connecting the Christian ethic of being a servant of God for the world might be exploited by some abusive leaders who want to keep others subservient, not to God, but to themselves, right? So you've got a person, you've got some kind of off-the-rail leader who's taking advantage of this Christian ethic to be a servant to take advantage of the follower. What advice would you have for people to kind of be aware of that? They're the follower in this situation. What advice would you have for them to be aware, maybe they're even wondering if they're being led poorly or even abusively under the auspices of being a servant? What advice would you have for that person?
Ouch, that hurts. And I am sure the person that is listening to you and listening to us, if they're in that role, they are in a season of darkness. Mm-hmm. And no one should be abused by a leader. That's absolutely not godly. That's absolutely not even ethical, mm-hmm. Whether it's a Christian organization or a secular organization. If you have a leader that is being abusive to you in any way, sound the alarm. Absolutely do not accept that, and use your voice and use it loudly. Let me take this into another arena. If you know of someone who's being abused by a leader, it may not be you. Sound the alarm for that person who may be not able to do it for themselves. Leaders at times, as we've all seen in ministry and outside of ministry throughout all ages, there are just those men and women who are going to misuse their power, misuse their authority, and are going to harm people. That is absolutely wrong and absolutely should not ever happen. But sound the alarm. Use your voice. Do not take that in any way, shape, or form. It is often because those type of leaders can silence people to not say anything that they are allowed to continue doing what they do.
So sound the alarm, speak up, do that on behalf of others. You mentioned it being a season of darkness. And one of the things about darkness is that we don't see clearly in darkness, right? What are some of the markers that a person might have that, okay, this is abusive leadership. This is not trying to implement a culture of service. This is not trying to develop Christ-like character as taking on the nature of a servant. This is not that. This is abusive. This is incorrect. For the person who's in darkness and is just kind of asking that question, well, what is this? What are some markers that you might say, watch for this or watch for that?
What a fantastic question, because there are seasons of darkness that God is leading us into. And that's obviously, we're not talking abusive leadership, but look at David, how he was pursued and hunted and persecuted by King Saul. Now, for whatever reason, God did allow that. And David was able to come out strong and to overcome and all those kinds of things. But there is a fine line if it is an abusive leader and there are things that are just horribly wrong. That's different. Sound the alarm. Open your mouth, you know. But there are some seasons of darkness where God will allow us, for whatever reason, to walk through a time of suffering. And actually suffering, especially from a followership perspective or even a leadership perspective, can have some good fruit that comes from it. Even things that were meant for evil can be used for good. But hardship produces good fruit. There's gratitude. Suffering can also build endurance if you're walking through a time of darkness as a follower or even as a leader. There's something incredibly beautiful about building those muscles of resilience and fortitude. It actually makes us stronger in many, many ways. Here's another thing that happens through seasons of suffering and leadership and followership is new things begin to develop. I have seen so many men and women in seasons of darkness where God used it to create new paths and open new doors and new opportunities. Sometimes we're looking for deliverance in these kinds of situations, but God is actually not into deliverance. He's into development. And he's developing us and creating strength in us and different things in us to endure, but to be used for greater works that he has in store for us.
I think one of the distinctions that comes to mind as we talk about this is, on the one hand, having faith that God is able to use whatever context is given to him to bring development, to open new doors, to deepen our faith, to build our abilities. And at the same time, that doesn't mean that all situations are pleasing to God. And so to be aware of the resources that we've got. You've been talking about using your voice. And so I might say it like this, that there's a darkness that can come. And because we get so attuned to the darkness that we simply close our eyes. But when we have our eyes closed, that's a different kind of darkness, right? We need to keep our eyes open and our ears open to be understanding what the darkness is that we're in, so that God is able to use it. But at the same time, to be critical of that darkness, to say, you know what? God might be using this for good, and I'll trust him to use it for good. At the same time, this shouldn't continue going on, right? I need to say that something is happening. I need to say that this is not a good expectation. This is not a fair situation that I'm in. One of the ways that I've often thought about this is, am I being treated as one who is made in the image of God? And sometimes there are things that I'll have my children do that they don't particularly want to do, right? The tasks or chores or jobs along the way, and they don't want to do that, but they're still being treated with value and respect and integrity, and because there's training. It might be unpleasant for them, but I can be honest when I say I'm still treating them as one being made in the image of God. In fact, because they're made in the image of God, I'm giving them important work, right, for their level of development, for their age. There are other times, however, that I can see that a similar task might be done or might be given to one in a way that it's not because they're made in God's image, but they're being treated in a way that's less than God, right? It's less than God's image. And if I can kind of have a critical eye whenever I've been talking to people about, are they under abusive leadership, is to ask that question, are you being treated, even if it's being asked or told to do something that is not your favorite, or that you'd rather not do, or that might be difficult, are you being treated as the image of God? If they can say yes, then that provides a new way of looking at it. If they're saying, no, I'm not being treated as one who's made in the image of God, then that's when we need to start sounding the alarm and speaking up and saying, okay, that needs to stop. Even if in hindsight, God may still be gracious in the midst of all that, we're going to try and draw that to a close and change the context and get some help into that situation, because that's not God's will for that to keep on going on.
Absolutely.
Let me kind of shift final gears for one final question here, because this has been an area that you've done difficult work in, but important work in, and using your voice. All right, this is where you've been using your voice and using the resources that have been given to you and that you've refined and developed through your education and career. You've been outspoken about the injustice of abortion. Many Christian leaders are sensitive to social injustice, and they want to be agents for good. And at the same time, they don't want to be co-opted by either the right or the left. Right? We'll leave it broadly like that, depending on what country our listeners are in. But they don't want to be co-opted by a political party. They don't want to be co-opted by one side or another. But they're passionate about speaking up for what is just and what is right. Give us some pointers here. How have you been able to maintain a Christian voice in the public sphere?
That's fascinating, Aaron, because all I have ever sought to do was to speak for those who could not speak for themselves. And it actually began when I was hearing a sermon on Proverbs 31. And I'm listening to the Proverbs 31 woman, and I'm thinking, I can never be all that. I don't like Proverbs 31. So I started reading Proverbs 31, and here's the funny thing. Right before it talks about the wife of noble character, there's these two little verses. And I'm thinking, those are my verses. I can do that. And I'm going to read them to you. And it's verse 8 and 9. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. And I read that and thought, I can't do all those other things, but boy, I can do that. I can speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. And here's the thing about abortion. It is not a left issue or a right issue. It is a life issue. No one in the womb is left or right. There is no politics involved in that. It's a child. And yes, I will use my voice. I encourage everyone to use their voice. Roland Warren, who's the president of CareNet, said something just that absolutely perked my interest. He said, premarital sex is not the sin. I mean, is the sin. But the baby is not the sin. And I love that because God created that child for a purpose, for a reason. He did not create a child just so that we could abort it. He created a child to be born, to be used, to have life. And so, yes, I will speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. And it is not a political issue. It is a life issue.
I like the way that you've described consistently, right? Speaking up for themselves, or speaking up for others who can't speak up for themselves. And as I reflect on this in terms of servant leadership, sometimes we think of servant leadership incorrectly, but we can think of it as a passive kind of approach. And I mean, in leadership circles, we have the title or the phrase of laissez-faire leadership. And sometimes we can think about servant leadership as kind of like just always responsive and not initiating, or it's diminutive, something like that. And yet, whenever I've heard people speaking up on behalf of those who can't speak for themselves, and doing so from a posture of humility but passion as well, I'm getting that. That's what I imagine when I think about one aspect of servant leadership: is how do they use their voice, how do they use their resource to solve a problem or to help address a problem that is not their own, right? Using a resource that is their own to solve a problem or to address a problem that is not their own. And I think that for me is a helpful way as I start to think about and frame servant leadership. It is not simply responsive. It can be very initiating. It takes tremendous courage. It can be one that even makes others feel uncomfortable, depending on appropriately uncomfortable, right? Because when we speak up, it can be threatening, and it can even make us feel threatened or make us feel uncomfortable. So to speak up is a tremendously courageous thing. And yet, if we do that, as you said about servant leadership, from this posture of humility, it can also be very disarming. And I think that's one of the things that you've done really well as you've tackled this issue that's so clear to you, and I think is very important as well, as we speak up on behalf of life, is to speak up and to speak clearly, but to speak humbly as well, and to be willing to listen. I think that really does model servant leadership. I think you've done a great job at that, and that is resonating with me as I reflect on this approach to leadership.
Oh, well, thank you, Aaron. I always say that servant leadership is for the brave, because it is not the easy path to take. It is really a harder path to actually love your followers, to invest in them, to take great care of them, to walk with integrity, to have godly character. Servant leadership is for the brave.
I found that Lewis quote, and I'd like to use it to finish up today as we bring this to a wrap. I think it connects with this notion that servant leadership is for the brave. This is what Lewis said. He said, "We thank God for the quote-unquote excellent absurdity, which enables us to play great parts without pride and little parts without dejection." I think that kind of attitude does require a certain amount of courage to tackle great parts with humility, knowing that it's about God, and to tackle small parts knowing that it remains about God, and that it's not about, neither one of those are about us. And that does take courage. It does take bravery, and may God give us grace to exhibit that courage. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. I would encourage your leaders to embrace their own servanthood.
Hmm. Listeners, you've heard it there from Dr. Kathleen Patterson. You can explore more of her works with a simple Google search with Kathleen Patterson, Servant Leadership, and you can find her faculty profile at Regent University's website as well. And we hope that you'll take the opportunity to do that, and not only seeing what resources Dr. Patterson has available, but also the other resources made available through the Wesley Seminary podcast. So avail yourself of those, and as Kathleen has just said, to embrace the servant role that God has given to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.